complainant of the case and the officer. So CRC, they start once we receive, and my understanding of the Department of Justice settlement agreement, that clock starts once the city receives notice that the complainant wants to file an appeal or the officer wants to file an appeal. So that 21 days is basically from that notice that an appeal is going to start.
Right, but there's a 30-day period for the complainant to file an appeal. So if you were to give notice that you're done with your decision-making at the after 129 days, then the public would know that this is a completed investigation and there's potentially an appeal. Yes, the CRC wouldn't necessarily get that appeal for another 30 days.
Yes. The issue is, you know, when a case is going to go to the CRC, our office, Internal Affairs, puts together a packet for the CRC members to review. So the only part of my comment was addressing was that the CRC would be able to get a theoretical head start. They would not be able to do that.
But they might be able to arrange their own schedules to know that there's potentially a 21 days when they're going to have to work very hard. They wouldn't be able to get the information, but they would know that there's a controversial case that's come to an administrative conclusion and that they might get it.
The only other, just sort of thinking a bit on the fly, one of the things that the feedback I may want to discuss with you is in terms of, it sounded to me like what you're saying is that the 129 days is really the portion of the investigation that's conducted that has nothing to do with the CRC appeal. And so one of my concerns was if you have an investigation that's completed in a timely way and the CRC appeal goes out of 129 days, I wouldn't think that you would necessarily want that reported on.
No, that's the piece after the 129 days, the 30 days for the complainant to appeal and then the 21 days that the CRC has. And as my colleagues have correctly pointed out, we also want to report if that goes long as well.
Yes, but
we
can work out. Yeah, and so I was thinking, I think it'll be a matter of defining what we mean by administrative investigations for the purpose of each deadline.
Right.
I'm certainly comfortable having us adopt this amendment so it's on the table and then have a further conversation with counsel. It sounds like there may be some drafting issues and legal issues, but at least we should have it part of the package before we go to public comment.
Okay. So roll call on the amendment, please.
Novick?
I think this is a very good idea. I mean, I think that the police commissioner and the auditor should know that there's a possibility that we might go past the 180-day time period, and once the first step has gone over 129 days, that possibility does exist. So I think this is a good proposal, and I vote aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, that's adopted. Any more proposals for amendments? Any more questions for the auditor, IPR director, city attorney? Thank you all very much, and let's take public testimony.
The first three, please come on up, are Dr. Leroy Haynes Jr., Kristen Chambers, and Casey Jama. And they'll be followed by Dan Handelman, Debbie Iona, and Brian Barnett.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. To our distinguished Mayor Charlie Hales and to our esteemed members of the Portland City Council, I am the Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes, Chairperson of the Avala Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. In the midst of the fluidness of the changes that are taking place with IPR, I'm going to limit my comment until we actually get some more substantive things to be able to do a critical analysis of what's taking place. But in light of that, conceptually, it is crucial for the city of Portland to have a transparent, independent, accessible, empowered review process to be able to build trust between the Portland Police Bureau and the citizens of the community of Portland especially community of colors and persons with mental health issues who have been the victims of police deadly force and excessive force. This is one of the essential linchpin for the reform of our police force and the transforming of the culture of the Portland Police Bureau. This is why it is so very important that the council have in the city a viable independent police review division with real power to be effective. Hence, we support many of the changes recommended by the auditor's office and IPR, but we also believe that they do not go far enough to change the lack of power in the independent review and the ability to hold officers accountable for violating the policy, the training, and the rights of citizens. I'm glad to see that there's an expansion on the ability to handle all shootings, not just some shootings, but all death in custody situations and serious injuries, as well as incidents that are of a higher concern to the community. It is not enough to just have an internal police review board within the department. If we are to make the Department of Justice of Agreement a reality, the component of an independent, transparent review board is a necessity to build trust in our city. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Kristen Chambers. I'm here on behalf of the National Lawyers Guild. We strongly believe that council should delay their vote on this IPR ordinance until after the fairness hearing for a number of reasons. One, the six recommendations that I sat here and proposed on October 23rd, of those, only one of them has been addressed and was already kind of an issue that was floating around before that hearing. And we have concerns that some of these issues, in addition to others that other community organizations have mentioned, are not seriously being considered as part of these reforms now. One of the things mentioned by one of you, I forget who, at that hearing was wanting to know more from the community about why people don't file complaints, why there's a lack of trust in the system, what is really going on in the community. And I think the fairness hearing is the opportunity for people in the community to come forward and share their testimony. The judge will be accepting testimony in writing and by video, and it will be a really good opportunity for you all to hear back from the community members and learn more about what is actually going on and what actually needs to be addressed in this ordinance. I'm also here to follow up on the memo that the NLG submitted to you on December 6th regarding the issue of compelling officer testimony. I noticed section 3.21.220 added some new language about compelling testimony, and there, I had just a couple of concerns about it. One, I'm not really sure why subsection D is necessary. It allows a representative of the Bureau to just attend the interview. I'm not sure what their role would be there. It seems to me that that would further detract from the independentness of the investigation if a Bureau member is just there present. And it doesn't seem necessary to me to have that person present there. Also, under subsection C, I'm not really sure why number three talks about reading a statement to the employee that they're required to cooperate and answer all questions truthfully, and otherwise they will be subject to discipline or discharge. And I'm confused about why that's something different from subsection A, which is talking about requiring an officer to answer a question or attend an interview if they're refusing to do so. And I think this just needs a little more work to figure out exactly how this process is going to work. It also raises some concerns with Garrity and the procedures in terms of when a statement is being compelled and when it isn't, which is a really important thing to be very clear about in these procedures. It's not something that you want to be figuring out down the road. So I'm happy to answer any questions if you have about this particular issue.
I have a couple of questions. And one is, you framed the one about the Bureau witnesses very clearly. Have you sent that to us in writing?
No.
If you would do so, I'd really appreciate it.
No problem.
Are there other pieces of what's being proposed that you think are actively bad, or is it just that it's not enough?
About this particular section?
About the whole thing.
The whole thing. I can't say that there's other areas that I specifically focused on. I was really looking at this one particular issue and then the other five issues that we raised on the 23rd in our testimony, in our written testimony to you, that really talked about issues that weren't addressed at all in this proposal.
So we could potentially certainly look at this section 220 in light of your comments to see if there are further amendments that could be done at second reading. But we could potentially adopt what's proposed, look at your other list of five and what other people have also told us they want. And by the way, if you could send that list of five again, that's always helpful.
Sure.
We could do that and then bring back something else after the fairness hearing.
Okay.
Does that sound like a reasonable mm-hmm. course of action?
Yes.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hills and the City Commissioners. My name is Casey Chama. I am the Executive Director of the Center for Intercultural Organizing. I want to first of all highlight that we are in agreement with the AIMA coalition and also other folks that this should be delayed until the fairness hearing. So I think that's kind of my conclusion on this issue. You're going to have my testimony, so I'm not going to read it. I just decided to just talk to from my heart because I think I've been here this morning and kind of seeing how the negotiation with the Portland Police Bureau went, and as well as also when I came to this chamber October 2010 in support of the IPR change, one of the most fundamental reasons that I supported an IPR change at that time was the ability that IPR to compel to interview the police officers. That was for me fundamental because for me and many community members in a long time that we want IPR to be independent to do their job. That's really one the fundamental issue. And I thought that particular piece was supposed to be addressing and that. So I thought it was a good change, and I wanted to support. But now that, again, it's been changed to what we in front of us, a little bit watered down for what we discussed on the 23rd in terms of the adding the police officer to be present at the interview, and I don't know, again, why the police officer has to be, police employee department has to be at the interview. It seemed to be it's not independent once we have a police involved in the issue. So that's, to me, one of the fundamental issues that I want to say to know and delay this process. Second piece is that for me also, I have been four administrations since I've been coming to this building for dealing with the issues of police. I spend hours and countless hours and many meetings about talking, Portland community members talking about holding our police department accountable. I do believe that you care. You're good people. You want to do the right thing. And the elected officials before you also were good people, and they wanted to do the right thing. Somehow, something is not adding up, where we are unable to stop and figure out ways to hold our police department accountable. And I came to the conclusion is that either we are unable or we are not willing to do that. And I don't know when will be the right moment, but that's kind of where I am today. I'm very, very frustrated with the way we are working with the issues of police accountability. And I hope that as a community, we can come together and step back for a minute and say, how do we ensure our community members build a trust relationship with our police department? And that, for me, those proposals we are now entertaining are not addressing those fundamental questions. For that reason, I urge you to delay your decision for the second reading. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
May I just ask the same question, Casey? In your letter, it says, given the urgency, why do we think the city should wait? To put it simply, the illusion of change is worse than no change at all. The upcoming district court hearings will give the public a chance to weigh in on police accountability in Portland and could be a powerful venue to strengthen the accountability systems. I hear your concern about the compelling evidence piece, and I think that's something that we have looked into since the last hearing, because that was something that I had asked the city attorney to weigh in on, and the city attorney thinks that what's currently being proposed is now legal. Is there anything else in this package that you think is not acceptable? If you knew that there was going to be another process, another soon set of changes after the fairness hearing, would you still want us to delay the vote?
I'm always someone who believes process and dialogue. So I think we need to, I will agree, we will continue to have the dialogue. At this point, I do not believe that moving forward will help us to build that trust the community has, because what we are witnessing for the last few days and the last reading we had on the 23rd is that whenever community comes up and brings an issue forward and it seems to be there is a pushback from the police department, it seems to be we're stepping back and going back to the safe place where we want to make sure that if, you know, our police department is happier with us. So to me, I want real change. So I think what I'm saying that we are assuming some illusion change. What I really am witnessing for the last 15 years I'm in Portland is that we are having a challenge on this issue. We want to do something, but it seems to be always we go through the process and we end up going away and farther away from the real change that necessary to hold accountable our police. And I believe that that's where we are heading right now, that ultimately at the end of the day, business will be as usual and nothing much will change. We might have a little tiny piece here and there, but real accountability is not going to happen. And that's where my concerns are.
And have there been any conversations in the community with IPR since October asking you what else do you think should be done?
I sent a letter after the 23rd to you and to the auditories in support of and congratulating the work that has been proposed. We haven't had any conversation with the IPR independent. I think I want to underline my organization and myself, I'm fully supportive of the mission of the IPR, but at this point, I'm just wondering that whether we need to remove the IN at the beginning, and really until we come up with the real independent police review, then we keep the independent police review portion of it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much. Thank you all.
Next three are Dan Handelman, Debbie Iona, and Brian Barnett, and they'll be followed by James Kahan, Daryl Turner, and Sylvia Zingerser.
Well, I feel like I've been here all day.
That's true.
That's probably because you have.
I'm wondering if I might have 4 minutes, Your Honor.
Please, go ahead.
Thank you very much. Mayor and City Council, my name is Dan Handelman. I'm with Portland Cop Watch. The revised proposed changes to the IPR are a huge disappointment, as they are a watered-down version of the October proposal, which the community complained did not go far enough. Because so many issues are connected to the DOJ agreement, any decision about changing IPR should wait until after the fairness hearing. The IPR is claiming these changes are being made in conjunction with the agreement. Item number 2 of the court cover ordinance reads, the settlement agreement between the DOJ and the city requires IPR have the ability to conduct meaningful independent investigations of police officer misconduct. Community testimony at the fairness hearing, expected to be held sometime in February, could prompt the judge to order changes be made to the agreement that better fix Portland's oversight system. Because the changes to IPR could be affected and because the judge should not be influenced by facts being created here on the ground, the city should delay voting. Also, as mentioned previously, there are dozens of other changes to the IPR-CRC system that have been proposed to the city repeatedly, which are not represented in this ordinance. When council sets about to change the IPR system, you should do it all at once and get it right. Here are some items changed since last time, when it conducts an independent investigation. Rather than having IPR compel officers to testify, a bureau employee will have to be present to compel the officer. This is not much different from the crazy way the IPR director described how things work now, where an internal affairs investigator has to instruct an officer to answer questions one at a time. DOJ asked for IPR to be able to conduct meaningful independent investigations, and this workaround is not sufficient. We've argued for years the best way to make IPR truly independent is to give it power to compel through a charter change that creates an oversight body with such powers. IPR is saying its independent investigations will mostly be focused on the rank of captain and above, and not cases involving community members. This is what we warned against at the last hearing, giving IPR powers that it doesn't intend to use. Many civilians do not trust the system because the most important part of the investigation, talking to the officer, is done by internal affairs. IPR's concept could be useful for recent issues involving Assistant Chiefs Kuykendall and Hendricks and Captains Wyatt and Kruger. However, limiting investigations in this way would let slide, for instance, Lieutenant Kerr, who left his precinct and shot and killed a man in a car across from his sister's house. Though the city paid $200,000 in that case, the internal investigation led to a firing that didn't hold up in court. When the chief changes discipline proposed by the Police Review Board, instead of having to explain himself in every instance, he will now only have to explain to the officer if the finding differs from the as-yet-unpublished discipline matrix. Thus, if the matrix says you could give the officer a demotion or you could fire him or her, the chief won't have to explain ignoring the board's recommendation if he rejects termination for a lesser discipline. Furthermore, the changes do not address issues in the agreement which will either empower or tie the CRC's hands. The agreement calls for CRC to be able to order IPR or internal affairs to conduct more investigation on appealed complaints. This is not in either version of the ordinance. The agreement would limit CRC to holding an appeal within 21 days, and that has to be part of the 180-day timeline, and nobody believes that's an achievable goal. CRC hearings currently take 60 to 90 days, and CRC members are all community volunteers. And P.S., the Bureau is refusing to put the materials online for the CRC. To its credit, the new code creates some flexibility in the 180-day timeline. It says someone, but not who, has to report to the police commissioner when the investigations take longer, rather than setting a firm upper limit. So it clarifies that officers will not be let off the hook when the investigation lasts more than 6 months. The agreement locks in place CRC's deferential standard of review, saying they must decide if an officer's commander was reasonable to find the officer in policy instead of making their own decision. That language is in the IPR ordinance, and you're not proposing to change it today. The agreement states that people involved in shootings and death incidents or the survivors can't appeal to CRC. The ordinance, again, is silent on this issue. So we really urge you to delay the vote until after the fairness hearing.
Dan, I have a question. I understand your point about delay, and I understand your point that you don't believe it goes far enough, but I'm having a little trouble understanding your point that this represents a watered-down version as compared to what the auditor proposed late fall, in part because I commend her for sitting down with the mayor and the city attorney and others and working through some issues that actually came up in our last hearing. So I'm going to give you another opportunity to tell us in what way, substantively, is this represent a watered-down version, in your opinion?
Well, as I said in my testimony, Commissioner Fish, the IPR in the old version could say, Officer Jones, I need you to come in and answer my question.
Oh,
in the new version, they have to have the police bureau employees sit there and do that.
That I understand.
That's watered down.
Well, you also said we need a charter change to fix it. So within the context of what's before us today, absent a charter change, how would you frame that, knowing that as what you know now, which is we've been given legal advice that we have to balance some constitutional rights and some legal requirements, absent a charter change, how would you write this proposal?
Well, this gets back to another issue, Commissioner Fish, that we talked about in the stakeholder group that never really got addressed, that the same city attorney who's advising you about what the police bureau's rights are is also advising the auditor what the IPR's powers are. So you could get a different opinion. Apparently, the IPR was given a different opinion before the last hearing, and now you're hearing a different opinion about whether they can compel officer testimony. So I think that we've looked at some of the cases that they're talking about, the case law, and I think that NLG is looking at that too, where it says the IPR has to be an integral part of the disciplinary system. Not that they have to be able to discipline the officers, but they have to be an integral part of the disciplinary system. And because they sit on the police review board and because they can controvert findings, I think it would be hard to argue that they're not part of an integral part of the disciplinary system. So I think that you're not looking in the right place, and I think maybe that people are kind of flowing with the status quo, and I'd like to see the judge weigh in on these questions.
Okay, so I appreciate all that, and let me just say that we've had some very highly regarded lawyers, the National Lawyers Guild, testify here. So if you have legal opinion that or language on this. I think you have every. Has anyone prevented you from offering that up? Because this has been noticed. You're saying that you have a different legal view, or an attorney might have a different legal view. Someone prevented you from sharing that with us? Because the reality is, we had some ambiguity in the legal opinions we had last time, which is why we encourage people to get in a room. They weren't contradictory. People were reading things differently. So we got everyone in the room together to work that out. I mean, so absent a charter change, you know, and I invite you to tell us how you would address this particular change, because it's not. I don't read it as a quote unquote dilution. I read it as someone in good faith trying to reconcile some legal obligations that we have. We're required to follow the law. We did take an oath. In getting to a reform. Now, if you have a different view, I'd be open to reviewing it, but I think it's to say that it's watered down and then say, well, you have to change the charter to fix it, I think is not particularly fair to the auditor. If you have another way of getting there, I think you should put it in the record.
I disagree that it's not fair to the auditor. I think it's unfair to the people of Portland who keep suffering from police abuses to say you're not willing to put forward a charter change. Why don't you as a city commission put forward a charter change and let the people vote on it?
Well, that's a different proposition.
That's a different matter.
But that's what you can do.
But you didn't raise that question when it was originally proposed. So in fairness, you said it's been watered down. It's not been watered down because we've taken off the table the opportunity to do a charter change. You used the words, it's been watered down. I'm just asking you to explain to us, not just rhetorically, but substantively, how this is watered down. And I don't read this particular change about in the first bullet point here as a watering down. I view it as working within the confines of the legal requirements that we're required to operate.
Well, Commissioner Fish, another member of this esteemed body, when talking about Digny Village many years ago, said, I'm not, people say it could be me or my children in Digny Village. It's not going to be me because I have money. What I'm hearing council say is that because we're not the ones who are suffering the abuses, we're not going to take the steps necessary to hold police accountable.
And that's not fair.
No, that's not what
Well, but that's what I'm hearing. So okay, I'm just explaining to a person who experienced brutality or some other kind of misconduct, and they go and they file a complaint, and then they say, all right, so what happens now? Now the IPR is going to ask the officer to answer questions, but they can't do it unless the commissioner of police or a police officer tells them to answer the questions. They're going to say, well, how is that independent? That's why it's watered down. In the old version, the IPR was moving towards independence.
Well, I guess we're having a debate with you, Dan, and we appreciate your willingness to do that. Let me explain where I'm coming from in this, and I think it's similar to Commissioner Fish. Regardless of how you want to characterize the change of wording from the last version to this, or in what we discussed this morning, my goal is to have policies and ordinances that we can enforce and where the city of Portland doesn't get rolled in some subsequent proceeding. So that's why whatever the law or the code is, I want to make sure we're clear on where we stand, that we're on good footing, because I'm not interested in a rhetorical victory. I'm interested in actually being able to enforce our discipline requirements when they're appropriate. So that's maybe why we're having this disagreement. I don't know, but that's where I'm headed.
Well, I appreciate that, Mayor, but again, my comment about facts on the ground, I think, is something that you need to take seriously. This is the discussion we had this morning around the police association contract, was that the judge will look at it and say, wow, you just signed this four-year contract. I'm not really going to mess with that. You know, whatever you did, I don't want to deal with it. The community had no say in that. The community had no say in the DOJ agreement before it came before you. This is something we have an ability to say something about. And the judge, if he sees, oh, well, will he just change the ordinance around this? Well, let's not tinker with it then. We've seen that happen again and again and again over the years. And it's time to put the brakes on it. Let us have a say in the judge. Maybe they'll change the agreement, order you to change the agreement. I don't understand how it works, but we'll find out tomorrow. And then let's move forward together on it.
All right. Thank you. Debbie, welcome.
Hi, I'm Debbie Iona, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. Any decisions on the proposed changes to the IPR and Police Review Board ordinances should occur after the completion of the fairness hearing. The potential exists that the judge overseeing the settlement agreement will make changes to some of the provisions after hearing the public's concerns. Furthermore, as we stated at the October hearing on this issue, The Police Oversight Stakeholder Committee recommendations should be revisited and, if appropriate, incorporated into city code along with those required by the settlement agreement. It is disappointing that, although the settlement agreement calls for IPR to conduct meaningful independent investigations, a police bureau representative will need to be present at IPR interviews in order to compel officer testimony. And I'm going to take that sentence out that's coming next because, you know, we're just having this, had this discussion about why you feel it's important to go the direction you're going, but on the compelling testimony, we would like to see the city kind of do some thinking about ways that we could change this over the long haul so that IPR can be truly independent. Many in the public have a desire to see IPR routinely conduct truly independent investigations, especially now that it has adequate staffing. The proposed IPR amendments include a 180-day time frame for investigations, as required by the settlement agreement. One of the outstanding issues that should be addressed is the unrealistic 21-day timeline for citizen review committee appeals that will fall within those 180 days. In anticipation of the imposition of the shortened appeal window, the CRC recently has made attempts to speed up the process. This has meant extra meetings and less time to review case files. Two of the newer members resigned, citing an unmanageable workload. We fear it may become difficult to involve citizens from diverse backgrounds if the workload becomes too great. Furthermore, a shorter timeline may jeopardize two of the most effective additions that have been made to the process, the case file review and the appeals process advisor. The case file review occurs after CRC members have read the files and before an appeal hearing is scheduled. At the review, the CRC discusses questions or concerns it has about the investigation and decides if additional work is needed. Resolving these issues before an appeal hearing has resulted in more successful outcomes. Appeals process advisors are former CRC members who are available to assist appellants or officers in understanding the process and presenting their cases to the CRC. With such a short timeline, it will be difficult, if not impossible, for the APAs to schedule sufficient meeting time to effectively advise the appellant or officers. As you can see, there are many issues that still need to be addressed. We encourage you to take a comprehensive look at the IPR ordinance after the fairness hearing takes place. Thank you.
I have a couple of questions.
Yes.
I understand that folks would like the direct asking of questions, but it seems to me that both the current process and the proposed is rather like a child in the middle of a divorce. Please ask your father where the child support check is. But if the message gets to that person and they then fork over the check, that might get the job done. So I understand the philosophical disagreement, but if both now and under this proposal the officer is required to answer IPR's questions, why is that a problem?
I think it's, you know, that there's a feeling that the people want the IPR to be independent and actually carry out independent investigations. I mean, you heard Casey talk about, you know, we want to have the I in the IPR. And even if it's just a perception, I think that makes people, and I can't say I have suffered from police abuse, but I think, you know, and so I putting myself in those people's shoes is difficult. But my understanding and what I hear is people who have had those kind of encounters are uncomfortable with having the police continue their involvement in a case once a complaint is filed. And this continues that practice. I realize now it will be reduced from what it's been before, but I think ideally we would like to get to the point where IPR could really do independent investigations.
Thank you, that's helpful. So this proposal says that right at the beginning of the hearing, the police bureau representative or the commissioner's representative says you have to answer all the questions rather than the continual back and forth.
Yes.
Okay, that's helpful to me. My other question is about my proposed amendment that would essentially set 129 days for Independent Affairs and the Independent Police Review to do their work. If we were able to encourage claimants to then appeal on day one, that would essentially give 50 days for the CRC to do its work. I think that this unanimity on the council that 21 days is unrealistic. I'm interested to hear that Commissioner Novick made another run at it, because I had tried at least twice before it was adopted and got the same answer. We still have the same answer, but do you feel like moving the administrative portion of it back will at least help?
Well, yeah, I mean, anything will help. I mean, just watching the CRC in the last 3 or 4 months trying to speed things up, you know, it really is taking a toll. And I mean, I know you used to be on the Planning Commission, and you know how much work that you had to do for that. And I feel like the CRC really even takes that up a notch. And with this compressed timeline, it seems to me it's going to be hard to find people who have the capacity to do that kind of work, especially people who have jobs and families.
Yeah, I just had my last meeting with Rochelle Silva, who's been my liaison. She's term limited out in February, and my understanding is that almost all the members are currently lawyers. So we have a lack of diversity of backgrounds of folks on the Citizen Commission, and hopefully with the latest recruitments we can start getting some other folks. But you're right, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
I appreciate their dedication.
Thank you very much, Debbie. Thanks. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Mayor and City Council. I'm Brian Barnett. I'm with the Freedom Socialist Party, so you might suspect what I'm going to say. But I appreciate that you're facing some very complex issues, and Dan has raised some of them. And I know that as you move toward a resolution or a solution, you're facing what gets left out. Is the community going to be happy with what is resolved? I think the community is pretty confused overall, because really became aware in the Kendra James incident, and since then I have just seen the same process go on and on and on without. The impression is that the IPR is just a marginalized, ineffectual group and unable to really carry out their intended and the work they put in. The Reverend Haynes and Casey talked about independence, and that's an issue that I know is difficult to deal with within the law and within the Constitution that you have to all have to deal with. But I propose that it's a very simple solution, that the Civilian Police Review Board should be totally independent. It should be elected. It should have no direct connection or controls from City Hall or the police, and they should have the power to discipline police. And it should be composed of a wide variety of people from all the communities of Portland. That's my position.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Can I just... Okay, one more thing just to clarify with Commissioner Fish. The reason that we didn't talk about the charter change last time was that the IPR assured you and the public that the city attorney had told them they could compel officer testimony the same way the BHR could. So, yeah, we've been talking about the charter change for many years. We didn't bring it up last time because we took them at face value that that's what was going on with that.
And Dan, I think you make a very valid point. And I, as you remember at the last hearing, I was confused about the legal guidance because I was trying to get clarity about what can we and can't we do. And the problem is, if we go down a path that we know will not withstand legal scrutiny, we're not providing a benefit to the public. When we take actions and then we can't deliver, we create even more cynicism. So now that we have clear legal advice about what we can and can't do, this seems to me, within the law, a reasonable workaround. Your opinion that we ought to change the charter is a way that would get around this problem. I get that. But for purpose of what's before us today, I don't view this as a watering down. I view this as reconciling the law and the goal of getting people, of compelling people to give answers before the IPR. And if short of a charter change, you think there's a different and better way of doing it, I'd be interested in seeing it.
Thank you.
The next three are James Cajon, Daryl Turner, and Sylvia Zingerser, and they'll be followed by Bruno Amici and Joe Walsh.
Afternoon. Hello. With your permission, I'd like Sylvia to follow me since we are a team.
Sure, that's fine.
Thank you. My name is Jim Kahn, and I've talked to many of you before. I know all of. I don't know you, Commissioner Fish, but I know the rest of you. I wrote to you when you made your first meeting, and Commissioner Fritz, thank you for having the decency to reply to me. The rest of you, I would have liked to have heard something. I'm going to really confine my discussion here. I wrote something. It should be before you. I've been listening. It's getting changed on the fly. I really want to talk about investigations. So I'll leave off a lot of the cute stuff I have in there, and you can read it and laugh at privately. I think, and this is, as I say, emerging, that the PPA, Copwatch, and you guys missed the point when you talk about investigations and all of this legal discussion about constitutionality, et cetera, misses the point. And the point is that IPR should not be a disciplinary body. It's a fact-finding body. And when it finds its facts, it's presented with an issue, and it either says, well, there's no problem, or there might be a policy problem, there might be a training problem, there might be a behavior problem, it might be all three. We're going to get to the bottom independently of what the problem is. And in order to be independent, an independent body needs to be able to look exactly where the evidence leads it, not impeded by vested interests. So I agree with Dan that what you've got is a watered-down version, because what if the police liaison officer says no? What's going to happen? Can't do the investigation. If, however, the investigation itself is divorced from a disciplinary body, it may make recommendations, as the National Transportation Safety Board makes recommendations, but they can't enforce their recommendations. The IPR can make recommendations, but they can't enforce their recommendations. That's left to other people. Let's make the independent police review an independent police review and stop playing 1984 with words. I think that'll get us around the legal problem. And that's my point. I'm going to leave it right there.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and commissioners. My name is Sylvia Zingerser, and I represent National Alliance on Mental Illness for Multnomah County. And I've left you with a letter that I dropped off in October because I was unable to stay to testify. And we stand by what's in the letter. I see that things have changed, that things have been worked over, so to speak. I don't want to use the word watered down. I do believe that IPR needs to have the ability to really compel testimony from police officers. I happen to be on the Training Advisory Council, and so I'm on a couple of committees for communication and for use of force. And my other concern is no one talks about it when they come here, about the piece that the union is really a key component to this, and it has to come before the union. It has to be approved by the union, and I'm hoping that the PPA will allow some of the community to sit and talk with them and see with if we can't come to some kind of agreement where we can compel investigation, compel the officers to talk about what has happened when things happen. And
Sylvia, can I ask you one question?
Sure.
It's been a long day of hearings, and
I bet it has.
I just want to make sure I track what's in your letter.
Okay.
Because you say in your letter, and I guess this goes back to the fall.
This goes back to the fall,
you
yes.
Recommend, you urge that we accept all five of the recommendations.
Right.
We have a grid that has four. What's the fifth that is not before us, or what's the fifth that she's referring to? That there's four different changes in the grid. I just want to make
sure. I don't remember what those are, and I don't have those before me.
But when staff comes back, we'll ask them, because I want to make sure that we know we match up all five that you're urging us to support.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Daryl.
Good afternoon again. I am Officer Daryl Turner, President of the Portland Police Association. I sit here today nearly 2 months after IPR introduced its original ordinance in October. Although IPR has revised its ordinance, the three points that I raised in October remain unresolved. First, IPR's proposed code changes trigger a number of collective bargaining issues that must be addressed before the city may implement the code changes. These mandatory subjects of bargaining include discipline, job security, and minimum fairness. Under our contract, the parties are required to sit down and bargain over these code changes. I certainly hope that the city adheres to its bargaining obligations. To help you better understand the city's bargaining obligations, I have brought copies of a letter, which I actually emailed to you, so you all got emailed the letter as well as my my presentation today. Detailed what I believe are the city's bargaining issues, before you can from our legal counsel. Second, in the past, the city has implemented new practices and procedures without first coming to the agreement with the PPA over mandatory subjects. The city's approach has consistently resulted in unnecessary litigation and disagreement. Collaboration is important. This morning, with the ratification of our new collective bargaining agreement and the DOJ settlement, we saw fruits of collaboration. This morning, I also expressed to you my hope that the city would work collaboratively with the PPA as the city considers law enforcement policy changes. Unfortunately, the revised IPR ordinance is not the result of that collaboration with the PPA. In all of my meetings with IPR staff regarding this ordinance, IPR has presented its ordinance as a done deal. There has been no room for negotiation. There has been no bargaining over these mandatory subjects, issues that must be addressed before the city may implement these code changes. Collective bargaining is a process of working together and agreement where both parties' interests are addressed. Until bargaining has taken place, these IPR code changes should not and legally cannot be implemented. This leads me to the third point. City Council should think long and hard about whether these proposed IPR code changes are good policy for the Portland Police Bureau. Currently, IPR is very visible in a disciplinary process. It has an unprecedented level of involvement and access to police bureau affairs. IPR's proposed code changes would upset this delicate balance by empowering IPR to essentially take over the police bureau's duties and obligations in a discipline process. Discipline of employees is a core function of the police commissioner, the police chief, and the police bureau. This ordinance is a first step towards taking that discipline out of their hands. The current discipline process also is a very long and winding, multi-layered process. Adding an additional layer to the process will only add more complexity and delay. Currently, when a Portland police officer acting in good faith and with intent of fulfilling his or her duties becomes the subject of an investigation, he or she faces an unprecedented level of scrutiny. The officer may face criminal investigation, inquiries by the DA's district attorney's office, an investigation by internal affairs, and an in-depth review by the command staff, the police chief, and the police commissioner. We understand that this long and winding road is not the exception to the rule, it is the rule. Now, the officer will face yet more inquiry into his actions, this time an IPR investigator. Due process is a core right of any public employee. A key aspect of due process is a fair and timely investigation. I fear that this added layer of IPR investigations will undermine timely due process. In conclusion, I do not believe that these IPR code changes are good policy for the Police Bureau and its discipline process. Even if you disagree with me on a policy point, we should all agree to respect and adhere to collective bargaining obligations. Thank you.
Daryl, I'm not going to ask you to put on a legal case because you may or may not do that later, and your lawyer would write the arguments, but you raised some points here that I guess I just want you to try to elaborate on for our understanding. In what way do these changes further inject? We have an IPR today.
Correct.
In what way do these changes further inject the IPR into the discipline process?
At the infancy of the discipline process or interviews, that's the infancy of it. Obviously, that'd be IPR's job to do based on these code changes, not the Portland Police Bureau's Internal Affairs Investigation Division. So that obviously starts the discipline process, goes up the chain, obviously, and once it gets up the chain, obviously the chief and you, the police commissioner, make the final decision on discipline based on the beginning of all parts of the investigation, including the beginning.
But they find facts. They either find facts or they don't.
Correct.
So
what they're going to do is basically they're going to, what these code changes said, there's going to be transactional immunity, which means the IAD investigator will be in a room. They will go ahead and give the officer the admonishments, then they will sit like a potted plant in the room while the IPR investigator asks the questions.
Well, they don't sit like a potted plant. They deliver the admonishment and tell the officer to answer questions.
Right, that's what I mean. And then they sit there. They don't ask any other
questions.
They've
done their job.
That is the
change.
Or the fact finding. That is one of the change. So.
But again, this is a fact finding process.
But it's still part of the discipline process, and that's what we assert. And we, whether we agree or disagree, that is part of the discipline process and it's the beginning of the discipline process, which then will have an end result somewhere down the road where the chief of police or yourself together make a disciplinary a decision based on that investigation.
All right, we'll have to agree to disagree on that because I think discipline ought to be based on facts, and who they come from doesn't change the color of those facts. Then secondly, you said that there's a due process challenge raised here. Again, what role change do we have in the IPR process here that threatens due process for the officer?
And again, there are several, but the main one for me, at least, without legal counsel here, obviously, is again the fact that the IPR investigator, part of that process is there used to be an Internal Affairs Division interview, then obviously the review by the several layers of command staff that go up. IPR now will have it, the way these ordinance changes look, will do the same thing, but it's coming from IPR, it's coming from an independent source. So it will have to take another level of review in Internal Affairs also. So it's layered again. Or it's a possibility that Internal Affairs does an investigation, they find be unfounded, exonerated, anything but sustained, and IPR may say, we don't agree, so we're going to now conduct our own investigation. And that's one of the things that...
That's why they call it independent. Yeah, no, I mean...
That's another layer for officers, again, where the way it's done now, an IPR investigator and an IA investigator, both in the same room, both conducting the investigation, the IPR investigator... Number one, can oversee as a watchdog type to see to make sure that the IAD investigator, which I know would not happen, but if it did, wasn't leading someone down the rosy path by asking leading questions as opposed to asking questions that are fact-finding. IPR investigator has that ability to do that right now, so that would change. So those layers would change, and that would be the problem for us.
Oh, can I just jump in for a second?
Please.
So, I mean, my feeling was this morning with the collective bargaining agreement and the DOJ settlement, we made some progress. I appreciate your right to reserve on these issues and say that they raise legal issues and protect your right to challenge them, but it seems like all of your concerns are focused on compelling the testimony, not on the other items that are before us. Is that fair?
That's for right now. I mean, there's other items too, but that would be the number one item for us. The main item is
you're not waiving anything, but
no,
I'd say that
no.
of the major issues before us, that's the one that you're highlighting.
Yes.
The others about the chief being required to provide a rationale and release of certain information and how we deal with the timeline. I take it those don't raise the same issues of the duty to bargain.
Because they're mandatory subjects of bargaining. Although the main subject for us is the compelling of officers to interview, does not mean we don't look at the other ones. There are a lot of moving parts to it. Those are the ones we want to address, because part of that bargaining is sitting down and collaborating together to make this agreement, to make these changes, if there are going to be changes, to make these changes agreeable to both parties. So it's not just those, but that's the main issue for us.
But just
that's not the only issue.
Wait a minute. Let me make sure I understand one point there, if I can jump back in, Nick, and that is, I hope you're not holding that the establishment of timelines is a mandatory subject of bargaining.
No, okay. No. What we're saying is things outside of the DOJ agreement, things that that were outside.
Thank you.
This
morning. It wasn't that long ago.
No, not that. No.
Okay.
That's why I say that's not the only one, but there are others, but it's not anything we've agreed to in a DOJ settlement, no.
So I'm
sorry, I should have clarified that.
Just scared me there for a second.
So I'm just trying to translate this point, and I'm not arguing it. You have the right to
assert
your position.
No, that's for another venue, obviously.
For another venue, but... So what you're saying is we may end up adopting these changes, code changes. You may end up taking the position that because the city hasn't bargained with you over them, they are unlawful, in which case you would have the right to file a complaint and have a hearing. These could be put on ice. We could have, and at some point, if your position prevailed, we'd be back to the bargaining table with an order to negotiate. And these things would not be the challenged pieces would not be in effect. That
could happen. Yes, sir.
That is the potential outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yes, or could happen the other way, where they say.
And your view is I don't want to ask you an unfair question, but is had you been engaged? You said that you were not engaged in the bargaining. Do you have a philosophical objection to these changes?
Yes.
Could you just recap for me? I missed at the beginning of your testimony, you said that there were three unresolved issues. There was discipline, job security. What was the third one?
Minimum fairness.
Minimum fairness. And what do you mean by that?
Minimum fairness means part of that, obviously, for the officers is their rights. That's part of that is their rights also, to be able to, I won't say mandatory subjects of bargaining, sit down, and part of that is us to work together in collaboration on these code changes. Obviously for things that will benefit both sides, but we want to make sure it's beneficial to everybody, not just to one side. We believe that right now it isn't.
So when we're in collective bargaining, there are restrictions on the involvement of various people, because if we're not entitled to be at the bargaining table, then we're not involved in bargaining. Now that we've settled the collective bargaining agreement, would you be willing to sit down with a group of folks and see if we could get to something that
would be more... Of course, that is our primary goal. It's not to stop the code changes, but to be able to have some collaborative input into those code changes.
And we could do it relatively quickly, right?
I'm at your behest.
Well, I remember back in 2010, we delayed for 2 weeks, and we made over 100 amendments between the first reading and the second reading, and got down to just one issue that the police association was thinking of grieving, and I think ended up not. So that's already set the precedent that we could do it relatively
right,
quickly,
right, yeah,
and
no.
If we were all trying to get to something that we felt was fair,
well, after the holidays,
I was thinking that too.
Well, in fairness to the president of the union, I just want to say that I think I heard you say fairly clearly that you just philosophically do not agree that IPR should be able to compel officer testimony. So we could have that discussion. Theoretically, we could spend 6 months talking about that. But you've also said, as a policy matter, you have a principal disagreement with that, so I'm not sure
as it reads right now. There's obviously ways that we may be able to sit down and we may be able to work that out, but I can't, obviously, I'm not going to sit and negotiate right now and tell you yes or no. But
no, and I'm not. You have every right to your position, but if you start from the premise that we should not be able to compel testimony, you know, I'm not sure we could bring in F. Lee Bailey, and I'm not sure we're going to negotiate to a resolution on that. The question is whether we have to bargain or not. I mean, that's the legal question. It sounds like you will test that, and it may mean this is going to be put on ice for some time.
Well, we don't have to test it. We can sit down and have that conversation. That's not what we're saying. We're saying we need to be part of the process, and we were not part of the process. If that means we have to go as far as testing it, then yes. But I'm open to sitting down and collaborating with the parties that are involved and seeing what we come with.
Well, let me ask you the same question that I asked Debbie Iona of the League of Women Voters. This change seems very small to me. Why is it important to you to keep the current system rather than the proposed change?
Because we think it's fair and equitable, because, like I said, IPR still has a a stage to be able to, and I hate using the word watchdog, but I'll just use that word for clarity, watchdog, over all internal affairs investigations. I have no problem with IPR sitting in, asking questions, being involved in every internal affairs investigation. I have no issue with that.
So the problem with the police or police commissioner's representative saying at the beginning of the hearing, you have to answer, rather than saying to every question you have to answer, what's the philosophical issue?
Well, they don't say every question you have to answer. They actually are involved in the investigation. They're involved in the they ask questions just like the IPR investigator is allowed to ask questions.
So why is this change